Holy God, through the waters of baptism we die with Christ. Raise us up also to live with Christ in the light of the resurrection. Amen. The first Easter vigil I ever attended was as a college student at a very fussy kind of high church in Philadelphia. And the philosophy there was, why choose just a few of God's saving deeds in history when you could chant all nine of them? The service lasted more than 3 hours, and the woman beside me left in the middle because the clouds of incense were making her sick. In the parish that raised me up for ordination, Saturday night was the big Easter celebration. And the church wasn't normally very pretty, but on that night, everything was candlelight, and you couldn't see the fraying vestments or the peeling paint. Everything felt so holy, and the words of the Exultet sent chills down my spine, the same way that they did a few minutes ago tonight. At that church afterward, everyone went down to the dingy little parish hall and partied until dawn. And the church was in a neighborhood where people sometimes hung around outside at night, sleeping under the awning or doing business in the parking lot. But after Easter Vigil, we threw open every door and invited them all inside, because nobody goes hungry at the Feast of the Resurrection. To me, whatever shape this night takes, it's always the holiest night of the year. So I was surprised a few years ago when I told a seminary classmate that this was my favorite service, my favorite moment, and he said, "Come on, Easter Vigil? It's like Easter for people who can't delay gratification for another 12 hours. And I've been thinking about that ever since. Why do we come here on this holy Saturday night? And why do we light the new flame now when only yesterday we laid Jesus in the grave? There's a Christian writer named Barbara Johnson who said that we're all Easter people living in a Good Friday world, but for me it's closer to the truth to say that we live in a Holy Saturday world. And if you've ever made the journey from trauma to whatever comes after, you know all about the long, dark night that comes in between. If Good Friday is the phone call that wakens you in the middle of the night, Holy Saturday is the hours that follow in the police station or the waiting room, waiting and hoping and praying that the doors will open and the news will be good, but knowing that maybe it won't. And if Good Friday is the diagnosis, Holy Saturday is the weeks or months or years of achiness and agony and wondering if remission is ever going to come. When the church gathers together on Holy Saturday, there's a reason we call it a vigil. The events of Maundy Thursday and Good Friday are chaotic and loud. There are police bursting onto the scene, and the disciples are being interrogated, and the crowd is shouting, and the women of Jerusalem are wailing, and Jesus is crying out with a loud voice, and everyone is fearful and confused. But after Jesus is laid in the tomb, everything is quiet. There's no noise left to make. And in our lives, the Holy Saturday moments are like the silence that comes after an explosion. Those moments of looking at a gravestone or lying awake and wondering whether it's worth it to pray for help and getting through one more day. The women who loved Jesus learned a terrible lesson at the foot of the cross that no matter how much you love someone, how much you wish you could offer yourself up to suffer in their place, your love alone is not always enough to save them from pain. And we're so used to the Easter story that it's easy to forget they didn't know what was coming. But of course, the cross and the grave are not the end of the story. And when Mary and Mary Magdalene make that long climb up to the tomb of Jesus, they find an angel waiting there. And the message they receive changes everything forever. As our liturgy tells us, tonight is the night when we hear the record of God's saving deeds in history. And we see a God who takes light in hand and throws it against the darkness and smiles on the earth. A God who keeps promises, who leads the people of Israel out of slavery, who promises that waters will never again come and destroy. And most amazing of all, a God so great in power and so perfect in love that even death can't stand in the way. The prophet Isaiah promises that when the Messiah comes, the bloodstains and filth of this world will be washed away, and destruction will be no more. But that vision feels pretty far away to us. The world we know is one of competition and one of scarcity and often one of fear, where we fight to be counted among the survivors, even if the fight leaves us filthy and stained with blood. And it doesn't matter whether we're fighting off the flu or an invading army, the only way we know to save ourselves is to inflict death before it's inflicted upon us. But then the stone is rolled away and we look into the empty tomb and we see that another world is possible. The resurrection of Jesus Christ lets us know forever that God is stronger than death, that love is stronger than death, and that we are written into the story of salvation. At the moment of baptism, we are baptized into the whole package. Like Jesus, we too will die. But like Jesus, we too will walk again in newness of life and freedom from harm and freedom from sin. And in the end, even freedom from death. We began tonight's service by praying that God would bring each of us to the fullness of redemption. But the truth is that in Jesus, God already has. The hard part is remembering that through the long holy Saturdays of our lives. And as we carry the new light of Jesus Christ resurrected through the night into Easter, that light is already shining in each of us. That fullness of redemption is already ours by baptism and by birthright. It's true that I can't wait another 12 hours for Easter. I've been waiting my whole life for Easter. So keep that new light burning. Easter is waiting for you.